This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to the Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
To thank the people of New Hampshire for a great victory tonight.
Welcome to the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. Bernie Sanders right now is the front runner in the race for the Democratic presidential nomination. For some in the party, this is some kind of nightmare. They say he's too far out to the left, out of touch with voters, that nominating Sanders is the best way to guarantee Donald Trump a second term. For many others in the Democratic coalition, Bernie Sanders isn't just a front runner, he's the very future of the party.
In politics, I believe you make the odds. Your energy, your support can change the odds from looking bleak to looking pretty good.
That's Keith Ellison. He served as the deputy chair of the Democratic National Committee before becoming the Attorney General of Minnesota. And he recently endorsed Bernie Sanders for president. I reached Keith Ellison in his office in Minneapolis.
I just thought, you know, Bernie's political and economic program and his basic approach to organizing and the fact that he got arrested for civil rights protests made me think that he had the right program and had the right approach to mass organization and organizing to move that program forward.
He did surprisingly well in 2016, or at least he surprised a lot of people.
Yeah, he did.
But there were still a lot of voters there who thought, I don't know, this guy is too left, he's too radical, too ideological for me. Now it's 4 years later, and there are still a lot of people who seem to feel that way, and you see them voting for Klobuchar or Buttigieg. What's the argument you'd make to those people about why they shouldn't be afraid to vote for Bernie Sanders?
Well, I mean, are they afraid of Franklin Roosevelt? I mean, in 1930s, some people thought minimum wage, you know, the Wagner Act, labor rights. People thought that NLRB or rural electrification was so radical, or Social Security. Now we take these things as like basics. In 1968, 17 different states had it to be illegal for a black person to marry a white person. Now people don't bat an eye. A few years ago, we thought gay marriage was an impossibility. And one day we're going to take Medicare for all as a basic. Paid family medical leave. We're going to say, yeah, this is how civilized societies are organized.
What do you say to the voters who say, yeah, okay, Franklin Roosevelt always called himself a liberal, not a socialist, which is a fact. This guy, he caucuses with the Democrats, but he's an independent.
I will tell you that I do reject this idea that Bernie's not a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, what is the Democratic Party other than the values that it stands for? The dignity of work, the dignity of labor, civil and human rights for everybody, a fair economy, social inclusion, and who exemplifies that better than Bernie, right? There are a number of people who are quote-unquote Democrats who do not vote with the Democratic mainstream nearly as often as Bernie does. He's taken on leadership within the Senate Democratic Caucus in terms of outreach and engagement. And I can tell you, as a member of Congress for 12 years, there's nobody who doubts Bernie's commitment to Democratic values or even working with Democratic colleagues. So I think it's that's a red herring. You know, I really do.
Mr. Ellison, the theory of the case in the sort of Klobuchar camp and the Buttigieg camp is the following, that this race is going to come down to a handful of states, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, and so on and so forth, and that their ability to win in those states is way higher than Bernie Sanders. You obviously disagree. Bernie Sanders obviously disagrees.
I do.
What's your theory of the case on that?
For a specific reason, because I don't think your average voter thinks, oh, is this left or is this right? Is this conservative or is this liberal? What they ask themselves is, can I afford this or not? If you go to farmers in Ohio and you say, you know what, you worry about your dairy farm, we'll worry about you getting health care. Some of them are going to say, that sounds all right to me. I've always wanted to keep my farm. I'm not sure we could even survive. If I had Medicare for All, that would change my life. I mean, you go to those same dairy farmers and you say, you know what, we're going to get tough on immigrants. And some of them dairy farmers are going to tell you, who's going to milk these cows if you kick Jose and Yolanda out of here? Mm-hmm. How am I going to make this farm work? People do not make 40,000-foot ideological decisions. People are like, I don't know what you're talking about. What I'm talking about is keeping my farm. I'm talking about keeping this factory open. And that is where I think Bernie really sells, even in places that we think might be more attractive to a quote-unquote centrist. The people there may have a more socially traditional way of life. That doesn't mean that they're not hurting economically. I'm telling you, they're going to listen to a leader who says, you know, we're going to actually try to solve some problems. I got something for you. We're going to do rural electrification. Somebody might say, oh, that's socialism. To the farmer who benefited from that program, they say, hey, I can turn the lights on in my farmhouse, whereas before I couldn't.
You are intimately familiar with Bernie Sanders and the Bernie Sanders campaign of 2016. How has he changed in those 4 years? How has the campaign changed?
Well, I think that the campaign is far more sophisticated than it used to be. Bernie is better known than he was before. Bernie's philosophy has soaked in and actually become really mainstream. I mean, and if you watch those debates, man, the question wasn't, well, what should we do about health care? The question was, well, is Bernie's idea perfect or does it need some refinement? Elizabeth said, yeah, well, you know, here's how we pay for it. And then Pete says, oh, well, I'm love for it, but I'm for this other option. And everybody else is sort of like making a refinement on Bernie's ideas. Bernie has truly captured the ideological victory here. And it's not just on Medicare for All. It's also on free college. It's also on the whole marijuana discussion. I mean, Bernie has changed the landscape in terms of what issues it is possible to even be for.
Why did he capture the moment and not Elizabeth Warren? They were very, very similar.
Well, I think that there are essentially two reasons. One is that Bernie, I mean, you can click up old photos of Bernie and here he is being dragged off because he's protesting in favor of fair housing in Chicago. Bernie just has a level of credibility. I mean, he is for what he's for. I mean, people hear politicians, today I'm for something, yesterday I wasn't when it wasn't popular. Bernie's like, you know, popular or unpopular, Bernie Sanders is Bernie Sanders through and through. And in the meat grinder, which is Washington, you know, you need somebody who's going to stay who they are. You know, so I think that Elizabeth Warren, you know, just plain old doesn't have that clan kind of history. You know, I also think that Bernie has really deepened his organizational. I mean, he really believes in organizing in a way, not just for a campaign, but for social change. And I think he says quite often that if you're going to make changes that are going to truly increase the wealth and income of poor and working class people, you will need a sustained mass movement to drive that change. And I don't know if Elizabeth has spoken to those issues in quite the same convincing, compelling way. But I got to tell you, I'm a big fat fan of Elizabeth Warren. I think she's an awesome person, and she has done a lot for this country and this race.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Anytime, man.
Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison. A debate a real divide is coming into view. On one side, you've got supporters saying that Bernie Sanders is the progressive future of the Democratic Party. And on the other, you've got centrists and party elders saying that Sanders is inevitably going to lead to a disastrous loss in November. Nathaniel Rakich is an election analyst for the data news site 538, and he spends most of his time studying polls and trying to figure out what exactly voters actually think. Nathaniel, unlike the vote counting catastrophe in Iowa, I think we now know who's won the New Hampshire primary. Tell me about the shape of that win for Bernie Sanders. Did he perform as forecasted? Did he exceed expectations, or did he come up short?
You know, he did come a little bit short of what we at 538 were predicting, but I don't really want to oversell that or read too much into it. I don't really see it as a sign of weakness. I know a lot of people are talking about, oh, he won 60% of the vote in New Hampshire in 2016. He's from a neighboring state. He should have done better than this. I think that's a little bit disingenuous. You know, in 2016, obviously, it was a two-candidate field. You're not going to be able to get 60% of the vote in a 5 bazillion way field the way that it is right now. Plus the fact the electorate is different. It's a different composition of the electorate. In 2016, you had a contested Republican primary. This year, you didn't really. And so maybe some of the folks who are more moderate, maybe Republican-leaning, maybe wanted to jump into the Democratic primary instead, voted for somebody like Buttigieg, who has more of a unity message. People shouldn't read too much into it. This was expected, but solid win for Bernie Sanders in New Hampshire.
Now, when you look at the numbers and the polling data, who do you think poses the biggest threat to Sanders being the eventual Democratic nominee? Is it clearly Pete Buttigieg, or is there a more complicated answer to that?
No, I actually don't think it's Pete Buttigieg at all.
You think it's
in
Biden?
Particular, his struggles with non-white voters. Yeah, I think if I had to choose one other candidate, it would be Biden. You know, he is still second in the national polls. He still probably is looking good in several Super Tuesday states.
Despite the miserable performance in Iowa and even worse in New Hampshire.
Those two states were never demographically great fits for him. I think that if the first two states had been Nevada and South Carolina, we'd be having a very different conversation, frankly, and a lot of that is just pure luck. That said, I do think that, you know, with every kind of unsettled results we get, so for instance, in Iowa, I think you had 5 different candidates getting national delegates. In New Hampshire, it looks like it's going to be 3. Every state that votes that gives delegates in a very scattershot way increases the chances that there's going to be a contested convention, which is honestly almost as likely as an outright Sanders nomination at this point.
Just a couple of weeks ago, The Atlantic ran an op-ed titled "Bernie Can't Win." And a couple of weeks before that, the New York Times ran an op-ed titled, "Of Course Bernie Can Win." According to the data, which of those op-eds is correct?
Of course Bernie can win. You know, look, he won the New Hampshire primary. He won the most votes in the Iowa caucuses. I believe the only candidate to win the nomination without winning either Iowa or New Hampshire was Bill Clinton in 1992. Sanders, in many ways, you know, perhaps not ideologically, but resembles Donald Trump in that he is a factional candidate with strong support, very passionate supporters among a certain part of the party. And a lot of people assumed in 2016 that Trump wouldn't be able to expand that support, but of course he was able to do so. And I think that that's true of Sanders. I don't think there's a lot of evidence for this idea that he has a ceiling of support. He's popular among the overall party. I think his approval rating within the Democratic Party is at somewhere like 70%. So it's not like there's a huge block of anti-Sanders voters out there.
Let's imagine Bernie is the eventual nominee of the Democratic Party. How does he do in the polls when stacked up against Donald Trump?
You know, I want to start off with the caveat that early general election polls have not been very accurate historically. That said, you know, to the extent that they do mean something, you know, Sanders does okay, but really all candidates do fairly similarly, I think, as a result of our polarized environment right now.
But that's a popular vote assessment, right? It's not a state-by-state assessment of how the Electoral College would come out.
Right. So sometimes you'll see a poll of, you know, Florida specifically that shows a head-to-head matchup between them. But yeah, I'm talking right now about national polls.
So Bernie Sanders, when he answers the question of beating or not beating Trump in the general election, his theory of the case is that he is not so much running as a candidate as he's leader of a movement, and that this movement will bring out unlikely voters, not only in states like New York and California, but it'll also bring over voters in the essential counties in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and Michigan. The theory of the case of his opponents is that Bernie will be painted as a left-wing ideologue to such a degree that there's no way he will get those votes in the crucial states, and he will lose an electoral college to Donald Trump. How do you see the numbers going? And I know it's early.
Look, I think that historically speaking, all other things being equal, more moderate candidates or candidates basically closer to the median voter have performed a bit better than more ideological candidates. That said, there is a lot of political science evidence that that gap is decreasing and may even be gone now, again, because of the polarization. People basically are like, I'm a Republican or I'm a Democrat and I'm going to vote for this person because I hate the other side so much. On the other hand, I think that Sanders makes a good point that there are clearly voters that he has turned out in the 2016 election in particular who wouldn't be ordinary voters, you know, younger voters in particular. He's very popular among. I think it's too early to know whether he's turning out those same people here in 2020. You know, again, because of polarization, his left-wing ideas wouldn't necessarily hurt him that much, but say they hurt him by 3 points in some of the suburban counties in, say, Pennsylvania or something like that.
Well,
that
let's look enough. At those. Let's look at those key states for 2020: Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, even Ohio. Can Sanders win those states?
The national political environment is the most important factor for that. Right now, it looks like the environment leans Democratic by a few points, maybe 4 or 5. It's enough to put those states into play. In particular, I think about Wisconsin and Michigan. He does have a good argument that he would be able to appeal to a lot of the people who voted for Trump, not necessarily out of any ideological agreement with him, although maybe they do agree with him on things like trade, but because they just feel like the system isn't working and they want to take a stab at something kind of at a radical departure, and Sanders would certainly represent that. I think it is harder to make the case that he would be able to win places like Arizona, Texas, places where kind of affluent suburban voters have put those states into play for Democrats.
You know, Donald Trump has been in office now for more than 3 years, and his base is as solid can be, but he has never cracked 50% that I know of in job approval ratings. And yet, Democratic voters and many independents who dislike him are not only terrified that Trump will win, some are even resigned to the idea. How do you answer that?
It's true that Trump has a very poor approval rating historically for a president. Basically, Gerald Ford was the only president with a worse approval rating. But on the other hand, it's certainly possible that he'll win, again, going back to polarization. So right now, in our approval rating average, Trump has an almost 44% approval rating, which is actually among the highest that he has had. And if you were to take that literally, he has a 44% approval rating and a 52% disapproval rating. Obviously, he would lose the election if those were the final vote totals. But I think that you do have to factor in the fact that this is a 50-50 Democratic-Republican country. He'll probably overperform his approval rating a little bit. And once you start getting into the 47%, 48% territory, that's when you start to wonder, well, even if he loses the popular vote again, the Electoral College could still help him out because there are several states that are just a little bit Republican-leaning, and he could win those states and lose the national popular vote and still be elected president.
Thank you very much, Nathaniel.
All right. Thank you, David.
Nathaniel Rakich of 538.